Stephanie's Train Travels.
Starting here, starting now, when we walk, we'll walk together, year by year.
This is our first episode of Stephanie's Train Travels.
My name is Stephanie Utt.
For this first episode, and probably the next one, what we are going to do is get to know Stephanie. So, Stephanie, tell us who you work for.
I work for Amtrak. I work on a train called the Empire Builder, and I usually do 3 train trips a month. They are 6-day trips. They start in Chicago, and then for 3 days, we travel through Wisconsin, Minnesota, North Dakota, Montana, and then finally, on the third morning, we end up in Portland, Oregon, where I say goodbye to the sleeping car that I've worked. And after my chores are done on the train and I've done all my work, I go to a hotel and I rest. And then I usually venture out in Portland. Portland's a great town. There's no sales tax there, so I try to do most of my Christmas shopping there.
Nice.
Portland is a great town for just a whole bunch of different food and music. The music scene there is exciting, and it's just a great place to visit. I wish that I was younger. If I was younger, I would probably move there, because Portland, you're an hour away from the ocean and an hour away from the mountains, and it's just they're very environmentally friendly there. Mm-hmm. You could bring your cat or your dog or a bird into the grocery store and they'll let you do that. And they've actually banned plastic bags throughout their whole city, which I thought that was interesting. So if you go to Walgreens or you go to a grocery store there, you're going to get a brown bag.
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of interesting that they did that.
And how long have you been working for the train?
I started in 1990. Okay. So it'll be 28 years next year.
And you love it.
I love it.
That's why we're doing the show.
In the beginning, it was hard. The hardest part was learning the different equipment that you are put on, learning about how to work with the public. And the other thing that was very difficult is trying to stay awake. You're thrown out there on a train trip, and you're doing 18-hour days. And quite frankly, my other jobs were, you know, office jobs. And, you know, you go to work in an office 9 to 5 and you're home every night in your bed. But when you're on the train, you're gone, you know, like a 4-day trip to New York, a 4-day trip to Boston, a 3-day trip to New Orleans, a 6-day trip to Oakland, California. It was very hard in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to adjust to that, you know, because you're going through the mountains, you're going through altitude, and I'm from Chicago. We don't have mountains in Chicago.
Right.
So, you know, you're dealing with lack of sleep, lack of knowledge about the equipment that you're working on. And you're just kind of, you know, you have 4 training trips when you get out of class. You know, there's a class that you're put into when you first start with Amtrak. And it probably lasts about 4 weeks, I would say. It was probably about 4 weeks. And then after that, you're on a 90-day probation period where they have set you up with 4 individual people as training trips. Some of those people weren't very helpful. Mm-hmm. Some were, but some weren't. And so I didn't learn too much from some of those folks. But
was there a hazing period?
There was, you know, first of all, they make you wear a trainee badge. And right there, it's like, oh, you know, that's a kind of a big statement, you know, to everybody that you come in contact with, from crew members to conductors to passengers. You're kind of labeled already like, you know, newbie.
Yeah, yeah.
And but yeah, in the beginning, it was very difficult because you don't have a clue sometimes of like, say you're coming into St. Louis to a station stop in St. Louis, and you don't know which side of the train to open up the door because no one told you. And, you know, I would go run to the conductor. Well, which side of the train do I open up, the right or left? Well, don't you know that? No, I don't know that. I'm asking you. I mean, we're going to come into the station stop, and I'm going to look pretty stupid if I don't open the right side or the left side and get this down. So I came up with a little system where I would take a train schedule, and I would put R or L next to that station stop.
That's
so
a really
I would know which side of the door to open up, and then, you know, going reverse as you're going back east, you just figure out, okay, you just switch it around, it's left or right, you know. You want to look professional out there, but there's one story where I was in Whitefish, Montana. Back in the day, we had huge ski groups that would travel from Chicago, like on spring break or whatever, and the conductor was kind of trying to warn me how many people are coming in my car. And this lady, the conductor, she said to me, she's like, Stephanie, there's going to be a big crowd there, you know, as you pull into the station, so just be prepared. What do you mean, be prepared? She's like, well, just make sure that you load the families first and then the couples and then the singles. So as I open my door, I mean, it was like a mob scene, and all of a sudden, this one lady, I was trying to take control of the situation, you know, to try, you know, to voice my opinion, say, okay, folks, we're going to have the families first, you know, parties of three or more, and then couples and then singles. And then this one lady in the crowd just yells out, do you know what the hell you're doing? And I said, no, I don't. I'm trying, lady. I'm trying. She's like, well, why don't you just get out of the way and let us go? I said, you know what? Okay. So I stepped aside and I just let him go for it. And it was pretty chaotic up there because, you know, I mean, basically what happens is you have the single people. They're going to come and they're going to grab a window seat. And then the families are kind of like, well, where am I going to sit? And there's no assigned seating sometimes. So they're looking to you to get them seated together. So as I came up the stairs, I was like, you guys wanted to do this, you know, you're on your own. it was hard. I mean, it was very difficult in the beginning.
So let's talk a little bit about how you started, how you ended up working for them.
Because
you told me when we were off mic talking about it, but it was never your intention to work on a train.
No. Right out of high school, I pretty much had office jobs. They had a data entry job at a greeting card company, which was right down the street in Chicago. And then after high school, I went to it was called Allied Film and Video on the north side in Belmont and Southport. It was a production company where Bill Curtis, who was a anchor, he was a news reporter, he would come and edit his shows. So from data entry at my greeting card company, I moved into accounts payable. And I was very disgusted with that job because here you come to work and you have a pile of papers and you finish that pile of papers and then you go home. Then the next day you come to work again and there's another pile of papers. And I thought to myself, I can't stand this. I can't do accounts payable. I can't do data entry. There's got to be something else. So one day, and I always liked to travel. I mean, when I was a kid, we would go camping and canoeing. And I always thought that, you know, I want to do something and travel. So one day I saw an ad for Eccles International Travel School. I would work Monday through Friday. And then three times a week at night, I would go to travel school. And I put myself through travel school. My mom and dad said, you're not going to travel school. We're not paying for that. I said, that's not a college. I said, it is a college. I want to do that. And they said, no. And I said, well, I'm going to do it. And so I did that. And I did that for a whole year. And it was hard. Three times a night, you know, it was like 6 to 9:30, something like that. And I learned a lot. Back then, they had, like the airlines had certain computer systems. Like it was called Sabar. And there was Apollo, and there were you learned the different computers that they had. You learned how to be a meeting planner. There was like maybe 1 or 2 hours that they talked about train travel, and that was about it. But I always wanted to be a flight attendant, and here comes the kicker. When I graduated from travel school, I started applying for all these jobs as a flight attendant for Delta, United Airlines, Northwest, Southwest. And on the application was the height requirement. Well, for those of you out there listening that don't know, I'm 4'11". You have to be 5'2". So that was, there went my dream crashing way down. So then after that, I didn't know what to do. I started a training session with Iberia Airlines. I did that for about 3 weeks, and I passed all their tests and stuff. So they went to offer me a job, and I actually turned them down. And at this point, I was still living with my mom and dad.
What would you have been doing?
Working for reservations behind a computer again.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Which and is what you didn't want.
Which, exactly. Right. That's not, I didn't want that. And back then, Iberia Airlines was the airlines to Spain. And that's when the Olympics were coming to Spain. That's why they were hiring so many more people. So I went to their training sessions and everything, and I passed, and they offered me a job, and I said no. And so I went home. I was still living with my mom and dad. I went home to tell my mom and dad that I had passed the class, and they offered me a job, and I turned them down. And there was quite a ruckus that evening. What do you mean you turned them down? It's a great job. What are you going to do now? I said, I don't know. You know, so my parents were just, they were about ready to kick me out of the house. They didn't know quite what to do. You know, I was over 21. You know, I'm still living at home, but I'm still not happy, you know. So finally, I start looking in the travel section for the employment jobs on Sunday, and there was an ad for Amtrak. And I'm like, huh. Train travel. I never thought about that one. And I thought, God, I hope I'm tall enough. So I end up going for training in 1990 with Amtrak. And my seniority date, officially, that's when everything on the railroad is by seniority. If you work for a freight company or you know, a different train company other than Amtrak, railroad life is all by seniority. So my seniority date is February 18th, 1990, and that's not when I started class. I started class like a month before that, but that date that's very important. That's how you bid on different jobs, so you always remember that date. And the people in your class, there's one other lady named Karen Ali, and we have the same seniority date. She's February 18th, 1990, and I'm February 18th, 1990. But how it works then, if somebody has the same seniority date as you, whoever is oldest is the person that has the most seniority. So she was born in January. I was born in June. So she's got me by 6 months. So Miss Karen Ali has actually bumped me out of a job once when I was leaving, and I was pretty mad that she had got me. So in the beginning, when you bid on different jobs and you actually are able to hold down a job, it's a pretty good thing, because I did the extra board for almost 8 years. The extra board is a list of names, and when your name gets to the top of that list, that's when the crew caller from Amtrak calls you and said, okay, Steph, we got a job. You're going to Boston. Your report time is 12 noon tomorrow. It's a 4-day trip. I'm like, okay. Now, if you say no to that job, you have broke what they call your guarantee for the month, which means Amtrak doesn't have to call you anymore that month, which means there goes your money. So when I first started, I was like, yes, 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 yes. And then finally, I started to realize, I'm like, wait a minute, I'm really tired. I mean, because when you work the extra board, you're only guaranteed 48 hours off. Like, you could do a 6-day trip from Chicago to California, California back to Chicago. Then you come home on that 6th day, and from that time that the train gets in, you're only off for 48 hours exactly. And then you're back on that list again. Now, they could call you 3 days from there. They could call you 4 days. And it just depends how long the list is, the extra board list. Sometimes you're all the way to the top already, and they're calling you the next day after you get in. Now, it's up to you, if you know the rules, to say, hey, that's not 48 hours. I'm taking my 48 hours. And at one point, I was realizing that I kept going and going and going. And I was in actually my girlfriend's wedding, and it was during the 90-day probation period, and I was the maid of honor. And I said, "Geez, I hope I'll be able to show up for your wedding." She's like, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, I can't say no to Amtrak." She's like, "You're gonna show up for my wedding. I don't care if they call you or not. You're gonna be in the wedding." And I said, "Oh, okay." But it was hard. You know, I did the extra board for 8 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 8 years. And then, you know, you have bids every 6 months. And so, you know, you just pray that you are able maybe at this point to hold a regular job, a job that you like, because I was forced to sign to a car called the Viewliner to go to Boston. Mm-hmm. And that was a very difficult car to work, because it was new. It was a newly designed car, and there were some interesting things that were different than the normal cars that I was
working. The cars you were used to.
Yeah, and it was hard to adjust, but I didn't know that they could do that, because I got the call saying, "Yeah, you got the Boston sleeper." I said, "I didn't bid on that." They said, "We know. We force assigned you to that, because when you're first start, if you don't bid on everything, they will force assign you to an open slot that no one's bid on." And I learned that the hard way. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was difficult, yeah.
So you, when you first started, so you just talked about how you got there.
Yeah.
How you started working. So was it love at first sight? Was it
No.
like the first trip? How long did you work before you realized, "I really, really enjoy this"?
It was probably at least 2 years.
Yeah.
Because the first couple years out there, you're just trying to find your way. You know, the other jobs I had, I was dealing with people, but not in a public capacity. I mean, I would, you know, my office jobs were, you know, talking to people on the phone, paying bills, you know, vendors calling, wanting their payments. But when you're in the public eye, you have to adapt very quickly to situations, you know, like somebody being sick in the car, perhaps a intoxicated individual, perhaps somebody that just is unruly. I had to find my niche of how to talk to people, and that took a long time also. And also there were situations where you know, I like people to like me, and I kind of ran into what I call some crabby pants people every once in a while. And I would go home to my dad and my mom and just try to understand, what did I do wrong? Why do they dislike me? And then finally my father just sat me down and said, "Stephanie, it's not you. It's just there's people in the world that no matter what you do, they're not going to like you." And That was a hard lesson to learn. I'm like, "Well, why?" You know, I'm doing the job. I was nice to them. I told them where everything is in the train and where everything is located. And, you know, I just couldn't do anything right for some people. And I just had to learn to deal with that. And that was hard, you know.
So it took about 2 years.
I would say 2 years, because back then we had more trains. But what I always liked is the crew. You know, because, I mean, I remember the first couple trips how, you know, some people take you under their wing and they really want to show you and have you learn stuff, you know. And I always remember the bonding of like, when I first started, I was on the Texas Eagle a lot. I was going down from Chicago I started in Chicago, and I would travel to San Antonio. And I remember the conductors over there, they were always so, they were Southern men, you know, but they were always so personable, and, you know, they always kind of took you under their wing, and they would play jokes on each other. Like, sometimes the conductor would lock this one supervisor in his room and he couldn't get out. And they made it fun, you know. Certain trains, you learned, were tougher than others, you know. I had always heard about the California Zephyr, how beautiful it was. Well, the first time I was on the California Zephyr, I was sick as a dog, because I was up and down in the altitude. You go through the, after you leave Denver, you go through the Rocky Mountains pretty much all day on that second day. Well, you're in and out of the altitude, and you're trying to do this job for 18 hours, and your stomach is tossing and turning, and you're just like, oh my God. And finally, when I got to California, it was a beautiful trip. The third day, you go through the Sierra Mountains, but you're trying to just navigate this job, and then here comes the altitude sickness and the lack of sleep, and then it was overwhelming. I mean, everybody's like, "Oh, wait till you see wait till you do the California Zephyr. It's great. It's great." I did not like that train for a long time because it was so difficult. And it's long. It was a long trip, you know.
But very scenic.
Incredible. Very scenic. It's probably the most scenic train we have, to be honest with you.
Does it still run?
Oh, yes, yeah. Every day, yeah. 365 days of the year. What's really interesting is when I first started, you had three trains combined. You had the California Zephyr, which was the train that would start in Chicago, okay? And then next, right in back of the California Zephyr, was a train called the Desert Wind, which would go to Vegas. And then behind that train was the Pioneer. We were 25 cars long.
Wow.
And I got to work that train twice. And what was really cool is you had the dining car was a Chicago crew base, which was us, Chicago. And then the Desert Wind had the Los Angeles crew, and they had their own dining car. So if I wasn't getting along with the Chicago crew, I'd go hang out with the LA crew, you know, and then the Seattle crew. But that was so neat because we would all start together in Chicago, and like I said, we must have been 25 cars long. You had at least three sleepers on the California Zephyr, plus maybe four coaches, and then the Desert Wind, probably two sleepers and maybe three or four coaches also, and their own diner. And then you also have two lounge cars with the big dome panoramic windows in the upper level. And then the final train, was the Pioneer, which would end up in Seattle. So all of us were together, leaving Chicago, and then we end up in Salt Lake City. And that's when it got really crazy, where they would actually separate the trains into three sections, you see. The Seattle train would go up through Wyoming, and then the California Zephyr, we would go through Salt Lake City and Reno and end up in Oakland, California. And then the Desert Wind and that was our only train that went through Vegas. And I was shocked when they did away with it. But the Desert Wind would go through Vegas and end up in Los Angeles. But I think it was 1992 or 1993, word came down that the Desert Wind is going to be cut and the Pioneer was going to be cut. They didn't cut them right away. When we were all connected together, all three trains would run every day, 365 days out of the year. And then finally, the Desert Wind, when it started to become on the chopping block, it went down to three times a week, all by itself, the Desert Wind. And that was fun because the Chicago crew would work that train, and we would be in Los Angeles on a Friday, and because it only ran three times a week, we would have two whole days in Los Angeles.
Oh, wow.
And we had a ball.
Nice.
Oh, my God. We had a ball. And then the Desert Wind also, the Pioneer, also would run three times a week. But I only did that route once, and it was a long trip to go through Wyoming and stuff, but it was so much history over there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And beautiful also.
Beautiful. All three trains were going through some very scenic areas, you know, that you can't see from a car or, you know, it's incredible canyons and mountains and just beautiful.
So you've told us a little bit about yourself. As each episode goes, we'll learn more and more about you.
Okay.
We'll learn more about your personality and your stories. And so we'll leave it at that for this week.
Okay.
Next week, you will have a new story.
Tune
every week,
yes,
you're going to have a new story that Stephanie tells. Any final thoughts before we wrap this one up?
Does anybody want to come on a train trip? Come with me. Yep, I'm leaving.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Yep, thank you.
Stop.